You're cutting out. Can you repeat that? Go for production. Go for production. I said go for production. Production.
That's right. You're listening to a podcast about TV and film production. Join us as we converse with industry leaders and gain insight into their strategies, their systems, and best practices in bringing a script to life. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your host, Brendan Riley.
Welcome to another episode of Go For Production, where it's my job to deconstruct and demystify the production process in both film and television. We'll talk about strategies, systems, and tools the pros use so you can be inspired to move forward in your filmmaking career. Today's guest is Lisa Mall. Lisa is a DGA second AD based in Dallas, Texas, but frequently works across the U.S. in various cities, such as New York City, Portland, Oregon, and too many cities to count. Her recent projects include Halle Berry's Bruised, Netflix's unreleased Grand Army, USA's Network's Queen of the South, and a handful of indie feature films. Past projects include IFC's Portlandia, Marvel's Daredevil, and Jessica Jones, and a smattering of movies the likes of Olympus Has Fallen, The Maze Runner, and Get On Up, to name a few. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Did I butcher your bio, or was it okay?
No. It's weird hearing it all said out loud, and it takes me back to all those projects.
Well, so one thing that's not in your bio that I failed to mention is that you went to North Texas Film School.
I went to UNT, University of North Texas, with you.
And I looked it up, and I was like, you graduated, I think, the same year, 2007, right?
I think so. Well, we ran into each other. There was a big DGA second AD Zoom call, I don't know, maybe a month ago.
Right.
And we were both on it, and I saw your face, and I saw your name, and I said, I know that guy. But how do I know that guy? And so I did some research, and I figured that we went to school together.
Well, I'm glad to have you on the show today, and we're going to talk about this new white paper that came out and kind of have a dialogue back and forth about just our thoughts in general and how, we can implement this. And I just, I wanted to bounce some ideas off you and hear your thoughts. So some of these questions we're just both going to try to answer ourselves, but in general, this white paper, which is a document that came out, was created by all the guilds and the unions in order to submit to Congress so that they'll give us the thumbs up. We can go make movies, right? So
right.
If this thing gets approved and, everything happens, then hopefully we're shooting in July or August or who knows when. It's a 22-page document. It looks very nice. Do you have any overall thoughts about this document that came out?
Yeah, my overall thoughts. So I read it cover to cover yesterday, every single word. And then I was browsing it this morning before our call here. And what strikes me most is that it's a lot of words, but it doesn't say very much. I guess I was hoping for something a little more firm, a little more specific, instead of... You know what struck me the most is it says there's a whole section about physical distancing, social distancing on set, and it says you need to socially distance. Unless you can't, then you don't have to. Same with, it had a section about transportation. It says use private transportation to and from work, either a Teamster shuttle or your own personal car, unless you can't, and then you can take the subway. It seemed like the entire document said, you should try these things. Unless you can't, then you don't have to. I was hoping for something a little more concrete.
Now, I have heard that this white paper is not to be an all-inclusive in terms of hopefully later on there'll be a more detailed guidebook is what I've heard. So maybe that will answer some of our questions. I think, today we're going to talk broad terms and just ideas, and we're not going to, go too detailed. But, I had kind of similar feelings. When I looked at it, I was like, okay, well, I mean, what about this scenario? This is made by all the unions, but what about a non-union shoot? Or what about a shoot that has just SAG actors? Do they have to all you know, follow all these rules, you know, and are they forced to have a, you know, the COVID compliance officer? I mean, I don't know.
And that's another thing. They keep talking about this COVID compliance officer, but they don't say anything. They say they have to be highly trained. Where is this training coming from? Who is this person? There's no guidance whatsoever as to where to find them, how to train them. They have a section that the whole crew needs to be trained in safety compliance, but they offer no advice as to where to find the training.
I mean, it sounds like it might be something that SetMedics will try to get into, you know, because mm-hmm. they're already used to being on set. I mean, it could be interesting to take somebody that's never been on a film set and try to put them in a scenario with hundreds of people and say, you're going to monitor the health and wellness of all these people, right?
Yeah. See, I've had the same thought. So not only do we need someone familiar with the film industry, we need someone who knows everything there's to know about COVID. And where is this person? Like, who is this person? Because, yes, I've also thought it should be a branch of the set medic. But it needs to be more than just the set medic. The set medic has their own things to do. We need people in addition to that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I don't know where to find them.
Right. So in general, I like the layout. I like how it feels like a commercial deck, which is kind of funny. I saw somebody make a comment. You know, it's not too long. It didn't take very long to read.
No, it didn't.
And, you know, I thought there was a lot of thought that went into it. And I was, you know, encouraged that, you know, we're trying to get back to work because we're all ready to, you know, do something. So I want to kind of just take some of the bullet points from the white paper and kind of talk about them. So at the very top, one of the sections talks about this idea of mental health and wellness. And I think that's very important that they mention that at the very beginning because, you know, working on film sets already creates anxiety, working long hours. And you have, you know, a lot of people with their opinion in general, right? And so then when you add on top of that, okay, now we have to also think about how to do this with this extra layer of, you know, screenings and PPE and mask and all this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any thoughts on this whole emotional component or mental health component?
It is tough. I mean, much like you, I've been keeping tabs on everyone's opinion. And that's, I mean, everyone has their own opinion of different things we can do to get back to work. I do think one of the key things is to shorten our hours. It allows everyone to get more sleep, which is, you know, I think we've all seen that documentary, Who Needs Sleep, it was made quite a few years ago at this point, that we all suffer from sleep deprivation. And again, that's one of the things I was hoping would come out of this white paper is more strict guidelines. Instead of basing our day on a 12-hour day, base it on a 10-hour day. Or maybe come out with something that says you're shooting for 10 hours and those last two are strictly for cleaning. The grips clean their truck, camera cleans their truck, props cleans their truck. Each department cleans up and down all of their equipment for the last 2 hours of the day and then everyone goes home. I think that would help with having everyone have a peace of mind. Even though part of the white paper says we'll have a team of the COVID compliance officers cleaning constantly, I think each department will be a little more assured when they clean everything themselves because they know the dolly has so many little bits and pieces on it. They know what's touched, they know which is the danger areas, and they know how to clean it. They don't want someone cleaning the dolly without knowing where all the different pieces are.
Right.
And I feel like that's something that I'm sure it's been thought about because so many unions went into making this white paper. I don't know. I've already said I'm a little disappointed with these guidelines that have come out. I was hoping for something a little more specific.
Yeah. When I'm thinking about the emotional side of this, I immediately think about wearing a mask, right? Because I don't know about you, but wearing a mask for 20 minutes in the grocery store is already makes me anxious. I can't imagine wearing a mask for 14 hours. Like, I think I would just go crazy.
I'm okay with the masks. I mean, I don't like them. No one likes them. They're uncomfortable. You can't breathe. They fog up your glasses. It's a horrible thing. But on the other side, it is one of the simple things we can do. We've all seen that little graphic that shows the percentage of contamination when two people are wearing the mask.
Right.
And so even though it sucks, even though it's horrible, I'm pro mask. I think it's the smallest right. thing we can do that would keep everyone safest.
Yeah. But I mean, going back to this whole idea of mental health, I mean, they're talking about, okay, they'll have an emotional support hotline. They'll have telemedicine, health and behavior health resources. And the last one was mindfulness training and provision of online tools and resources. I don't know what that means, but I mean, it sounds good.
That's the thing. I don't know what it means. Like this. Yeah. Is that going to come from the unions? Is it going to come from the studios? Is it up to each production? Does it mean we're going to hire a therapist to be on site? Just like, you know, sometimes you get a masseuse and give little chair massages on set. Are we going to have a standby, psychotherapist for that same exact reason? There's still a lot of questions.
Yeah. So let's move down the document a little bit and talk about this whole idea of diagnostic testing. So one thing I've heard recently is that, you know, the way their testing is going to change, hopefully, in that there'll be, you know, easier devices, like almost like a breathalyzer instant test is supposed to come out in September, right?
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. So stuff like that will really make things easier. But in the meantime, the question that I have is, okay, well, how often and how far in advance? And okay, we get these test results. Who's responsible to submit them to where, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the production to check. Okay. So let's say you've got 100 people on your crew and you have to wait to see if all 100 got tested. Okay, well, where are these results going? Who's monitoring them? And then if you're on a show that has a lot of day players, right? You know, maybe
player get tested? Yeah.
So that's a whole, you know, it's more work adding to, it could potentially add to the AD staff, right? In terms of they're typically monitoring those types of things. Like,
it's almost like, finish your
sorry, I was going to say, it reminds me of like going to shooting in a prison. You know how fun that is. Like, okay, everybody give me your ID, which is, you know, you got to beg and plead, and it's just a nightmare, you know?
How hard is it to get an entire crew to bring their ID with them to set, and now we have to put all this other stuff on top of it?
I mean,
yeah, I've heard a couple times that from various people that the COVID compliance should not fall to the ADs, but in a way it's going to. You and I both know it's going to. One way or another, everything always ends up coming back to the ADs. I think we need to form a whole new department just for COVID compliance. There will be however many people you need, however many is necessary, whether it's one person for every, let's say one person for every 20 people. So if you have a 100-man crew, that means we need 5 COVID compliance people. These will be people at crew parking, checking temperatures when they get out of their cars. Oh, you know what? One thing on the white paper that kind of the only thing that surprised me is there's only one little sentence in there. After people report to work, they should not leave the work site until the day is complete. So everyone comes in at the beginning, we check everyone as they come through the gate, and then no one leaves until the end of the day. But is that going to be testing everyone every day? This whole thing is based on the assumption that tests will be available however often as necessary, which they skipped right over how often is necessary. And that test will be available for the entire crew all the time, which so far we know that isn't true. Here in Dallas, they're still limiting how many people can have a test every day.
Well, and I guess it's one thing.
So how are they going to have enough?
It's one thing, I think, if you're taking the...
Sorry, our Zoom is messing up a little bit.
Uh-oh. So, you know, the Tyler Perry approach is we'll just put everybody in a pod, right? But, I mean, not everybody can afford that. And it doesn't really make sense for most people. I mean, I don't want to quarantine for 14 days in a motel room. Do you?
No, it would be terrible. And no, not at all. And a lot of people are, you know, single parents. They have to take care of their kids. Are their kids going to come and quarantine in a motel with them? I don't think so.
Well, plus you have to, I mean, what, somebody going to bring you food and slip it under the door like you're in prison? I mean, it just
right.
doesn't.
It's, I know the approach is to like treat it like a location shoot. You're going to bring everyone out and keep everyone together. But I mean, I've been on location before. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the pod idea was interesting, but it didn't seem very plausible.
It doesn't seem practical.
So, I think the biggest thing for going back to this testing idea is figuring out when and how often, right? It's just, and how do we really manage that data? It'd be nice if there was something where you get a certain, I don't know what it is, something in your email that gives you permission to enter crew parking, right? It's just a little, I'm verified, right? And it's like a green.
Well, and there was somewhere in the white paper, there is a statement that recommends digital screening, like an app that you type in. I don't know, maybe you take your temperature at home. You type in your temperature, how you're feeling, if you have any of that, and if it brings up any red flags, then maybe you should stay home for the day. You don't even go to crew parking. You don't start the next set of screenings. There was something that mentioned that, but as far as I know, these apps don't exist yet.
Well, I do. I have heard of something. There's one field, I think, where maybe it's the medical field where they ask their residents every night, do you have these symptoms? And they have to answer these things like you're talking about. So it's kind of like a self-diagnostic thing, which I think has, you know, a good case going for it. Let's jump to another section talking about PPE, personal protective equipment. So the big thing when we talk about PPE is this idea of medical masks, cloth masks, and face shields. Now, when they mentioned face shields, I thought that was a cool idea. I bought one today and I wanted to test it with you just to see what you thought. because I don't know if I have an opinion one way or the other, but I think it's worth noting that this committee at least researched that and came up with that idea. So here's my thought. I'm going to put on this regular face cloth mask.
Uh-huh.
Okay, can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Okay, but it's still a little harder to hear me, right?
You're a little muffled, will make a problem with our walkie-talkies.
So, right. Okay, and then we have my surveillance here, right?
Uh-huh.
So, well, the question is, will it go through this? I don't know. Maybe it will be muffled, or we'll have to do this.
Can you clip it on the inside?
Can I clip it here? Oh, that's really
cool. Can you clip it? You use your clip and do you have a spot that you could clip it?
I don't know, but it's going to feel kind of, will this be the new thing? Well, I'm just clipping it like that, testing 1, 2. I don't know. It feels ridiculous. But one thing I'm worried about this whole idea of this mask is just being able to communicate, especially for ADs, directors, people that have to, you know, communicate information to lots of people quickly. And, you know, it's just, you know, anytime I'm at a grocery store and somebody says something at the checkout, I can't hear what they're saying.
You know, what's so funny is I realized if you're talking to someone, you're both wearing masks. It happened to be, I got some pizzas the other night. I was talking to the pizza guy across the counter. I could not understand him. I couldn't understand a word he was saying. And it made me want to take off my mask to hear him better. How right. does that make sense?
And then it's counterproductive. So I went and bought this face shield today. I'm going to put it on. Now uh-huh. you can only see this on the YouTube video. You cannot see this on our audio podcast, but you guys will get the picture. So it's a plastic shield, and I look a little bit ridiculous, right?
You look a little bit like Data from Star Trek.
Well, that's good. So now, but can you hear me easier?
I can hear you perfectly fine.
Okay. Now, if I take my surveillance, I can easily put this under here. Mm-hmm. No problem. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. The other thing that I could do with this is if you have a megaphone, instead of yelling, because I can't yell through this thing very easily, is I can take a megaphone with this intercom connector, testing yeah. 1, 2. And that way, you're letting the megaphone do the yelling for you.
And how do you feel? Do you feel more comfortable wearing the shield than you do the cloth mask?
Well, here's the benefit to the shield. The shield protects your eyes, and they've done studies that show that this thing can actually get into your eyes. So mm-hmm. even some, I think it was some doctor recently got COVID through his eyes, is what he said. It is easier to breathe. I won't say it's, you know, 10 times easier to breathe, but I think it's maybe 5 times easier, in my opinion. I think if I had to choose one, I'd pick the face shield. But, you know, there may be times that it gets tiring and I might switch over to the face mask.
Now, do you think the face shield, so it's open on the bottom, do you think it still offers the same amount of protection as a mask that covers your mouth and nose do?
Well, some of the face shields go pretty low. So, you know, it's a gamble. I feel in general that if we're on a film set, everybody's been tested, everybody's using hygiene, that, you know, face masks are a good thing, but in some instances they may be overkill. So, let me give you a scenario. Let's just say that you're outside on a field or in the desert and everybody's kind of spread out, you know, you're able to social distance. If, you know, people have already said, hey, if you're outside walking around, you don't need, you know, a face mask, right? Just not that mm-hmm. helpful. It's like, don't wear a face mask if you're biking down the road. Now some people still do that. But I mean, what if it's 110 degrees outside and you're wearing a face mask? Is that going to be difficult?
I mean, oh, absolutely. Yeah. Even potentially dangerous.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they've already released statements saying like, don't go jogging with your face mask because you can't breathe.
Right. So, and now here's what I also think is interesting is like cast is required to wear a face mask upon entry. But once they start their hair and makeup, the face mask is going to mess up that hair and makeup. Now, the face shield that I just showed you has the potential to not touch your face, but it might mess up, you know.
It'll mess up your hair and, yeah.
Or it could mess up your forehead makeup, right? So, but in the document they talk about, okay, if the actor is, you know, shooting, obviously they can't wear a face mask. But once they're done shooting, if they can, then they should wear a face mask. But if they're if they're wearing makeup, then they can't, right? So
yeah, that brings back to what I said earlier. It said all these things like you must wear face mask and PPE. Unless you can't, then you don't have to. That's the most frustrating part of all this.
Okay, so let's say that you have, you know, 100 extras, right? And you've already cut it back down. Maybe it's supposed to be 200, but now we said, okay, it's COVID. We're going to get by with 100. Mm-hmm. 50 of those are men. 50 of them are female women. The women all get makeup, and they're approved not to wear masks. But the guys, they didn't get makeup, or maybe some of them did, some didn't. This is the ones that didn't get makeup. Do they have to wear masks?
Yeah, I guess they would.
But the scenario seems kind of comical in a way, right? Because it's like, you know, we're going to be on set with, you know, 100 extras that aren't wearing masks, 20 casts, 10 casts that aren't wearing masks, you know, 20, 30 crew that are wearing masks, you know, and it's like the
vibe. I think that's a scenario that we're not going to see anytime soon. I think all the shows are being rewritten to have very minimal background. We're not going to see any big, huge crowd scenes. I don't foresee us having to deal with that situation, but I understand the concept. I understand the questions. How do we do that? I don't know how.
Well, I'm just saying it is comical to think about how it just seems like, okay, these 20 people have to wear masks, but these 100 people don't, and the virus will be safe from everybody if we're, you know, it's just like, I don't know. It's just funny.
Well, and you know, also there's going to be the mentality of you test your whole crew and your whole crew comes back negative. No one's had the virus. You know, everyone is safe, but we still want you to wear the masks. You know, there's going to be people saying, we've all been tested. None of us have it. Why do we still have to wear the mask when we know that we're all negative? Like, these are going to be the debates that come up on set.
And you know, people are going to get tired of wearing this mask and they're going to have that debate. And the question is, who's going to enforce it? Will they get fired? How will you replace them? It becomes a thing, right? And you know, nobody's going to want to be the mask police. I mean, it's just not going to be fun. I mean, one thing I was trying to think about is, okay, are there scenarios where I don't have to wear the mask so we can give people hope? Okay. At lunch, can't wear a mask, right?
Can't wear a mask, but you have to be separate from everyone, which that's going to be a huge warehouse to have lunch in.
Yeah. You got to find a place where or you can do French hours, I guess, and just, you know, not do the typical, you know, 20 people to a table or whatever. So the question is, during the day, let's say, you know, 12, 14 hour day, maybe we're getting it, you know, the day shorter, but other than lunch, can I take my mask off at any point, or do I have to wear it all day? So
it would depend on what your job is. If you're the best boy grip, right, and you're on the truck doing paperwork all day, you're on the truck, you're at the back of the truck by yourself at your desk back there, probably take it off. If you're the camera operator, no, you can't. You are literally touching the camera all day long with your face, with your eyeball right on the camera, surrounded by ACs and cast and the AD. No, like, they would have to wear it all day long.
Yeah, it sounds like the people that are part of the core hub of being near camera, like the ACs, the ADs, the director, scripty, you know, they will be essential to wearing that PPE full time. Maybe there's hope for other departments. Like, okay, let's say I'm grip electric. I go do my thing with a mask. Go change the lights, go back to the truck. You know, we're social distancing outside, not wearing a mask. Can we do that?
Yeah.
You know?
I would think so.
I just want to be able to think through some of these scenarios so it's not like you wear a mask 24/7 to the bathroom. You know, it's like at some point it just becomes a lot.
Well, and that's one thing that the vagueness of the white paper addresses a little bit. It says, wear the mask or socially distant or both. And so I think that's fine. If you have the distance, take your mask off, have a breath. If you're going back inside, then put it back on. But that does, of course, raise the other issue of, if you're not, we all know at this point, you're not supposed to touch the mask on the outside or the inside. You're really just not supposed to touch it. You're not supposed to use it consecutively without either disposing it or washing it. So if you have take your mask on and off all day long could create issues.
I agree. I mean, it's definitely, when I think about this whole thing, the mask idea, it's just something that needs a lot of thought, because mm-hmm. it's just going to, you know, be tiresome. And you know, I've talked to people, you know, in the restaurant industry, in the medical field. You know, my mom's a nurse and she has never had to wear a mask before, you know, other than, you know, surgeries and stuff. But now she's having to wear it for a 12-hour shift, and she says it's really hard. It's really difficult. So I think we've got to come up with some solutions to give people a little bit of hope and some grace, and trying to just think about how we can approach it. Looking on to the next category is hand hygiene. It's pretty detailed about this. I think a lot of this will be really helpful when there's some type of online training that a crew member or cast member takes prior to being employed.
I did like that section of the white paper. That one did go into some details of have hand washing stations. If you can't have hand washing, then have a little Purell, an alcohol-based station available throughout your set. If you can't have that, it even said to have a little spray bottle of hand sanitizer and give it to every crew member to keep in their pocket. So that one, they did go into detail on that, and that's something that I think is very feasible. But it circles back around to whose job is that? Is that going to fall to locations to set up all these things, whether on stage or at a house or on location, wherever you are? Or is it going to fall to our new COVID compliance department? You know, who's going to keep track of these things? Who's going to restock them? All those sorts of questions.
Yeah, and I think, you know, at what cost will this add to production is one thing people are trying to figure out too. I mean, some people said this could, you know, cost an extra $150,000 per production.
It's going to be extravagant.
So, you know, looking at this hand hygiene part, you know, it goes in detail in terms of actual cleaning equipment as well. And, you know, I think it's important, although I do think it's also important to recognize that the CDC, you know, had that recent study saying that it doesn't transmit as easily as we thought it did, you know, through surfaces.
On surfaces, yep.
Right. So originally we're all freaked out, like, can we, you know, touch the grocery bag? So yes, we should be cleaning stuff, but at the same time, we should notice the truth about this virus. Looking at this idea of paper, I thought this was a very interesting concept. It says, whenever possible, use of paper should be minimized. Alternatives such as electronic scripts, electronic sign-in sheets should be explored. And it's talking about going digital as much as you can, which I'm a huge fan of. I've been advocating this for many years. Sometimes I get pushed back, sometimes I don't. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, I'm a fan of it. We've done that a couple of times where, I think on Portlandia we did it. You know, Portland in general is a very eco-conscious, right. They recycle everything. And we did have some hard copy scripts, but you know, the Portlandia script was 400 pages long. Each sketch had, you know, multiple pages. It was huge. And so Portlandia, we had mostly digital scripts. And then of course they're revised. And so you can't keep up with all that much paper. I've thought for years that if the amount of paper that your typical production goes through throughout, say in a 13 episode season, printing all your scripts, all your revisions, all your everything, if you simply bought every crew member a tablet only for their scripts, it would still be cheaper than all of the paper that you buy throughout the course of the season. So I am a big fan of that.
I've actually thought about the tablet idea too, although I don't know if every crew member would need a tablet. I think if the cast is, you know, they need to see it bigger than the best boy grip, who can maybe pull it up on their phone. Mm-hmm. But I, this whole tablet idea I thought of several years ago, wouldn't it be cool if there's some, like, you know, bank of iPads or some other type of tablet that, that is, you know, loaded each night with that sides for that actor that are like color coded. So this, you have a blue iPad for this actor, he pulls it out and then it's cleaned and, you know, but it's, you know, it's money, it's setting it up, but I think there's hope.
No, that is an interesting idea. Instead of giving a set of sides to an actor, you give them their personal tablet. That is a good idea. The only thing against it is that I do this myself when I break down a script, and I know actors do it too. You write your notes in the margins. Or when I break down a script, I use different highlighters to highlight different spots. That behavior will be more challenging to digitize.
Right.
So as great as it sounds, I know I still want a hard copy script because that's how I learn it. That's how I put it into memory about what's in each scene.
Now, and sometimes what I've done on these, when I go digital on productions, is try to find that balance. Okay, we're gonna send everybody the digital sides and call sheets, but we're still gonna have a few printed, you know.
Yeah.
The director is always gonna want a printed sides, you know. So, but I, you know, and they did mention that, you know, when paper scripts are unavoidable. So, you know, they realize that you're going to have to print some things. I did like this idea of electronic sign in out sheets.
That's great. I know I think it's usually the electric department has been doing that for a while now. All their time cards, they do it digitally. For some reason, it's only been electric. It hasn't trickled down to the rest of the departments yet. But they do all their time cards digitally, submit them to accounting digitally, and they don't have paper copies at all. I like that idea.
Yeah, there are some new technologies out there. I know CrewGlue is able to take a PR and they kind of dissect the back of it so that they can digitally send out these like sign out sheets for different departments. Mm-hmm. And I know there's probably some payroll companies out there that have something similar, but this in general, and then I mentioned this on another video, was RABS does sign and out sheets for extras, so you don't have to deal with those paper vouchers.
Those vouchers, what a mess.
So I think that could be huge. I mean, in general, this idea of going digital is always a good thing because we're helping the environment and we can save money and it's efficient. Mm-hmm. So you know, I like what they wrote there.
What's interesting about the guidelines is that strictly from an environmental standpoint, they split it down the middle and half of it got better and half of it got worse. You know, by digitizing all of our call sheets and our scripts and everything helps the environment. But then mostly on the food service side, we'll be creating so much more waste. Everyone with their disposable containers, disposable silverware, prepackaged food. That's going to be an unfortunate environmental impact from us.
Yeah, you're right about that. One thing I want to talk about is this idea of the COVID-19 compliance officer. So what are your initial thoughts when you think about this position? I know you talked about it a little bit earlier.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's necessary. I think it needs to be a whole department. And I have no idea where to find one. I have no idea where their training comes from. I don't know who they are. Are they a doctor? Are they a nurse? Are they a set medic that has buddies? I love the idea. I don't know who they are.
Yeah, and the question is, what type of training will get them up to speed quick enough to, you know, be on a set relatively soon? So I mean, in general, I agree. We're ready for that position. We don't want it to fall on the AD's shoulders, although we agree that it will probably at some point, you know, cross
paths. Back to us, yeah. No, and I took the John Hopkins released a, it's like a 6-hour contact tracing course. And I took the course and they sent me a little certificate. So I'm certified to be a contact tracer, but that doesn't make me at all comfortable to be a COVID-19 compliance officer on a set. So right. where is this training that, say I wanted that job, what training do I take to get to that level? Where is it? That's what I would have liked to see on this white paper is, you know, compliance officers who are trained and approved through this training, whatever it is.
Right. Well, hopefully that will be, that will come up in the next coming weeks. You know, one of the last things I wanted to look at was this idea of physical distancing. And, you know, it talks about writer's rooms, video village, audiences, shared workspace. You know, the video village, you know, I had, I don't know if you used that technology where you can have the iPads on your set, right?
Have you? Yeah.
So, I mean, that's great because
only once or twice have I seen it.
Right. Yeah, it is kind of new. So, it's, you know, not every production has adopted it, but if more and more productions can adopt that technology, it allows the makeup artist to, you know, still look at monitor without being right next to the director, you know, or having to set up six different, villages. Now you are limited to the number of monitors on some of these systems, but in general, I think it's great. What do you think about virtual writer's rooms?
That's a subject that I can't really speak to. I'm not a writer. I have never seen the inside of a writer's room. I just know that they exist somewhere. It sounds great in theory, but I know that writers do bounce ideas off of each other a lot, and that will be more difficult virtually, but in theory it'll work. But I can't really speak too much to that aspect of it. Same with the casting aspect. It's not a process that I've gone through personally.
And, you know, I have heard that, you know, it may be possible to do virtual writer's rooms, but, you know, how successful will it be, especially when you're dealing with comedy and you need to be in that physical space, you know, to try things out. I don't know if I believe it'll be possible, but, you know, I guess it's worth a shot. One thing I wanted to think about was this idea of pre-production. You know, let's say you're prepping a movie or a TV show, you got weeks, maybe months, in an office with cubicles, or maybe it's a certain scenario, you're in some stage office. What do you think about this in terms of, does everybody wear a mask in the office? Do they have to? If they're social distancing, are they fine in their cubicle without a mask? I mean,
I do think we'll have to, there's been talk about the air filter and air circulation, and that if one person is infected and it gets into the air system, then it can infect everyone. So that's something that'll have to be addressed before people go back to a production office, is if there's proper air filtering. If there is, let's assume that there is, I think cubicles would probably be adequate. You know, if everyone has little walls between them, we've seen that in grocery stores now, little plexiglass walls. Cubicles would be fine. If you have an in-person meeting, then I guess both parties would have to put their mask on if they're in the same room together. But cubicles, I think, would be appropriate in the office.
Right. Yeah, I guess the question in terms of the AC units, I mean, I've heard, I know you've probably seen the videos saying, okay, this restaurant spread this disease, the virus through the AC units, right? Well, you know, what type of AC unit was it? Was it blowing really hard? Was it at the level of the people, or was it just lightly breeze? Was it a huge fan? I mean, we don't, these things would be helpful to know. What's the ideal type of ventilation that we need to think about.
I don't know who knows that.
Right.
Do I call the guy who repaired my thing here in my house, or do I call the guy who put the air conditioners in Walmart, or does anyone know this?
As we wrap things up, I just wanted to try to just think about anything that we might kind of left off that is worth noting. What are your concerns about going back to work or about trying to implement this in your next production?
One of my last thoughts would be, so often when there's a problem on set, something goes wrong. It always does. The first thing people say is, how is production going to fix this? What is production going to do about this? But with coronavirus, we find ourselves in a situation that production can't fix this. It's not something within the realm of possibility for production to fix coronavirus. And so even with the guidelines of this white paper, and we all of the things that we can do, hand washing, face masks, distancing, even if we do all the things, there's still a level of risk. And so I think we need to implement a sort of self-governance. We need people to take responsibility for themselves and their own department and understand that production can't fix this. If you're a makeup artist, your hair and makeup trailer, you have 3 makeup artists and 3 hairdressers. Do all 6 of you need to come to set, or can one of you go to set and cover things there? I think each department needs to think a little bit more about the crew as a whole and less about we all need to think about the specific needs of each department and how it affects the whole crew. Just be mindful that production can't fix this one. We all need to fix it together.
Yeah, I like that idea of, obviously keeping who's on set minimal, and every department's going to have to rethink how they normally do their stuff, right? It's already difficult enough to make a TV show or a movie, right? You're already dealing with 100 things. So it's going to be challenging to add one more thing to think about. I mean, a lot of times we're just trying to make it through the day, and now we're like tasked with implementing this whole idea of safety and health.
I'm hopeful, and hopefully we can all get back soon. I know everyone's thinking August, September, maybe we see a commercial pop off in July, hopefully soon. I know we're all pretty tired of staying home.
Yeah. I think, when we get back to filming, I think it's like you said, it's really important that every department really think for that position, for that department, how can they best interpret this guidelines, and also, self-govern in a way of saying, we don't really need 3 costumers to be on set, right? We could get by with 1 or 2, right? Just trying to define that balance of what's realistic and what can help, the crew in general. Lisa, I really enjoyed our conversation. It's been great. I think it's so good to connect with you since all these years of being in film school together. So
I know, I couldn't believe it. Thank you for having me.
Hopefully we'll get to work on something together at some point.
I hope so.
Okay, I'll talk to you later. Bye.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please visit us on Apple Podcasts, leave a review, and share it with your friends and network. You can also visit us online at assistantdirecting.com, where you can subscribe to our e-newsletter, where we'll send out updates and information about what we're doing and how to stay connected.